Welcome back to the Patrick and Robert Show.
Hey!
Well, tonight is the Patrick and Robert Show.
That's right.
Cambridge Inside Out in April 19th, 2016. So we spent much of the first half hour talking about science and inclusionary zoning.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in that order, but actually in that order.
And we noticed by the five viewers watching that this is the most riveting show on cable, Central Square Cable Access Television, so thank you for your viewership.
They're just waiting for you to offer free ice cream at Tuscanini's or something like that. So, anyway, just talk a little about housing a little bit more here. In addition to Cambridge trying to solve all the housing problems of the universe,
yes,
internally without reference to any place else.
Because no other place exists. We live in a Cambridge-centric universe.
Right. The truth
We're not
is,
sure what's beyond the borders. We don't want to know.
The truth is that housing unaffordability is becoming a problem, has become a problem, not just in Cambridge, but in places like Somerville first became just like Cambridge and many of the other surrounding towns, places where you said, well, if you couldn't find an apartment in Cambridge, so you could always go outside, right? Well, now that's becoming less and less true. So there are a few bills in the state legislature.
Very good ones, I might say.
Yeah, some of which have been filed.
Some of which I've plagiarized.
Right. Some that have been around for a few years and are being reintroduced and moved along. And to others that are relatively new, that are not just looking at what's happening in Cambridge, but really talking about changing the way in which Chapter 40 kind of...
Chapter 40A.
Chapter 40A.
Yeah.
But the thing is, this is part of the legislation from the state that allows cities and towns to do zoning. That's not something that... That's not a right a city and town had, you know, an inherited right under the original charter from 1600 or something. It was something that was granted in the 1920s, and it's undergone some revisions over the years.
If you take any zoning class, and I've taken one,
that's one more than
more,
me.
More than that. But the origin of zoning was to prevent, undesirable uses from colliding with undesirable uses, but in the extreme, like keeping a pig farm away from a school,
right,
or from where
or
your
smokestack
house.
Industry next to a
correct,
kindergarten.
Correct.
Yeah, things like that.
It wasn't there to help you keep signs off of buildings or to make sure you couldn't build a deck.
Right, exactly. But it's or I think as is the case with some of the suburban towns in around Cambridge, not so much Cambridge, Somerville, and Boston, but the further out you go, the people have used zoning pretty much to preclude many things.
Exactly.
With a net effect of actually increasing the unaffordability of housing everywhere.
Correct.
So, I mean, and I grew up in New York, and in New York, when Manhattan started filling up, it spilled over into Brooklyn, and Brooklyn started filling up, things grew out into Queens, potato farms became apartment houses.
Yeah.
And
well, zoning is something that shouldn't, it's not static. It shouldn't be, because our lives change so much. And by the Senate bills on admission, this stuff hasn't been looked at in over 30 years, and it's dusty. It's time to take a look at it, kick it open, and see, try to curtail some of the abuses and try to actually get some housing built in places that are not just Cambridge and Somerville and these places who are already playing ball.
Now, there are two in particular that are worth highlighting. Yep. One is, let me do the second one first, is the Massachusetts Senate Bill S-122, which is entitled An Act Promoting the Planning and Development of Sustainable Communities.
Yes.
Right.
This is one that I have personally ripped off the language on several points. It's a great bill. It's got a lot of procedural stuff in there, and it's the biggest chunk of it is the Section 8 part of it that really is something that I actually put before a lot of developers and architects and the city manager even a couple of years ago, dealing with how projects are presented. A lot of people complain that developers don't approach them. Am I getting this right? Approach them when projects are coming, and part of the reason is they're scared of what is called downzoning or reverse spot zoning. And what Section 8 of that bill does is it sort of, at the time of a developer submits his plan and gets his permitting, the zoning is locked. So, as a result of neighborhood outrage or one activist who thinks that, they need to freeze an area in amber for all times, can't bring a downzoning position, which would then put what we call like an asterisk next to the project, because if that zoning petition ever got passed, then the project is scuttled. So I think in Cambridge, I think has, you know, a fair history of that. I can recall at least two downzoning petitions since I've been here in Central Square related to development. But for Manchester by the Sea or for places
like that's where it's just over the top.
Yeah, they right. block everything. So
where, I mean, there are entire cities and towns I should really say, where you can't build anything other than single family
right.
homes.
Right.
And so well, that'll get to the second of these two bills here. But
that's what the second part does. I'm not sure, I forget if it was the House bill or the Senate bill that had the accessory dwelling unit portion of it.
It's certainly in the House bill. It's mentioned in the House bill.
So the Senate bill, that Section 8 is probably the biggest, most powerful chunk. It's a protection for developers. It makes them want to go and reach out to the neighborhoods sooner. I think something as a point of notice, like I wrote that into a zoning petition that I wrote 3 years ago and was marketing it as like a threefer, like this petition, part of the Bear petition, and some other stuff that I was shopping around to see if people had interest. You know, and people were very surprised that a lot of the neighborhood groups didn't have a problem with that bit. And I stole that language verbatim.
And that was the part about...
The developer protection for so like when
oh I see so once you know the zoning in place at the time of submission is what you have to live with
right without. So developers can bring their projects, file their plans, and then have the dialogue with the city and the neighbors that they should be having,
right,
as opposed to being under the gun of a down zone, which I've seen two down zoning petitions here so far in Central alone, the Yanow petition, and then councillors Carlone and Mazin brought a zoning ordinance to the council, which gratefully was thrown out. But those were reactions to developments and not a really good way to start a dialogue with people.
Right. Now, I found reading this Senate Bill 122 a bit of a challenge because it's 76 pages.
Yes.
And a lot of it is procedural and trying to kind of ferret out, figure out what's the sort of the salient features of this, what's the intention is a little tough. But there are a few things that are sort of giveaways in the very opening paragraphs. For example, after some of the historical stuff, it says, whereas poorly planned residential, commercial, and industrial development exacerbates the affordable housing shortage, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they do talk here about to enhance and modernize the planning regulatory tools for municipal zoning, subdivision control, and master planning to guide local growth through the following bill, et cetera, et cetera. They kind of weave in enhanced definitions for affordable housing, which I don't know was in it originally. It was in Chapter 40B, but I don't know if it was in the original.
So it updates a lot of the definitions and like
they talk
removes
about,
a lot of like clericals or commas where they're not supposed to be commas and things like that.
Right. There's a provision about a schedule of development impact fees, which is something we essentially do in Cambridge,
yeah.
But I don't think that that's sort of a statewide thing. I think we do it somewhat differently. Development impact fee, form-based zoning, inclusionary zoning is actually being written into...
Right.
The law, if this passes, we don't know if it's actually going to pass, but transfer of development rights.
This has been around for a while, so it's...
It's been around for a while, and there's actually a lot of sponsors listed with it.
Right.
So hopefully they can actually do some sort of a omnibus legislation that kind of revamps the whole chapter that deals with the way zoning takes place, because right now... the burden falls on places like Cambridge and Somerville and Boston pretty much to address the affordability issues, and they're the only ones that are being in any way
thinking
about density.
A lot of the housing advocates talk in Cambridge. A lot of them seem to speak as if Cambridge is the only place in which this issue can be solved. I don't really hear much of a regional discussion about housing, and it's unfortunate because we are really quite small compared to the cities we're often compared to. Relative to housing and what kind of density we can handle. When we did the C2 stuff, which I am bringing back one way or the other, we weren't even really, it wasn't even part of the dialogue to like not solve a housing problem. We couldn't say, oh, we want to make Central Square more fun and more safe. We're like, no, we have to solve the housing crisis.
Well, I have to say something about that because, you know, we sort of we diverge a little off into Central Square, which is fine by me because I love Central Square. But the thing is that prior to the K2C2 process and having watched a lot of these processes over the years, the only type of community benefit anybody ever talked about really was like housing.
Right.
And
right.
It is an important community benefit. Maybe occasionally a little bit something on open space, right? But things like, good working retail environments, a sense of place, things like that, you just never heard before, the K2C2 stuff. And now they were incorporating it as a proposal. It was never acted upon, unfortunately. But allowing things like exempting ground floor retail because people felt it was a desirable and an important thing that you don't want to have to go away.
Look at any Central Square Corridor as a really good example of this, and so are any of the BA zones in this city. Look at the neighborhood commercial districts. They're all going away because commercial is, on the retail level, is not lucrative anymore. It is not,
right.
It's not fueling the building like it used to. Now the residential component does. Or the lab component, if that's what you're building. You know, I think when Alex Twining comes back, I'm going to ask him to build a movie theater. And I'm not going to shut up about it until he does.
Right. By the way, there used to be a movie theater, right?
Where so it's a perfect fit.
Normandy Twining Project is proposed to be. So so anyway, but my point is simply that I've always felt that there were lots of different benefits that people should talk about. So it's not shouldn't just be housing, right? So in some respects, we've liberalized that discussion, so we do talk about other
things. If all you build is affordable housing in these districts and you don't put affordable retail in there, what the hell are these people going to eat?
Right.
Now, what stores can they afford to go to? If this turns into a plaza, and all we have are affordable units above.
And fancy high-priced coffee shops.
Fancy high-priced coffee shops and fancy high-priced ice cream shops. it becomes very difficult, I think, to operate any kind of retail corridor with any kind of stability or continuity. And if you look at Central Square's corridor, it is the least continuitous area. You can see, matches
that's
places.
That's a new word, by the way. Continuitous.
Continuous.
I'm going to use that in my mathematics class next week.
Your checks cashed here to like Goodwill to like Thelonious Monkfish, all these to Mattress Sleepies, it just into a series of vacancies. Morse.
Well, I have to say, there's still, thankfully, in Central Square, there's still some affordable places you can buy a cheesesteak sub or something like that.
Thanks to Joseph and Nabil, you can get the cheapest lunch in Cambridge at the Middle East.
Still can do that. That's right. So I'm grateful that.
But they make not a dime doing that. Not a dime.
My biggest fear, I even said this in the public testimony during the C2 process, is that after all is said and done, I can't go. If Brookline, a place like Brookline Lunch goes away, then we will have failed.
I couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more.
So we still have it. We have to hold it.
Yeah.
And I do hope that as the Envision Cambridge process continues, that that kind of more, that broader viewpoint about shaping neighborhoods and squares. So it's not just about the cost of housing, but it's also the
quality of life.
It's just the system has to work.
Yeah, I couldn't agree.
It's all about getting the system work.
Want to talk about the House bill?
Yeah. So now there's this other bill here. This is called House Bill 1107 from Kevin Honan. And I know Jesse Canson, I don't know if we talked a little bit about this last week. This is when I, as an owner of a triple decker and a person who kind of believes in the affordability that a triple-decker can provide people, both for me, it gave me my affordable housing, and enabled me to provide affordable housing to others. But many, many cities and towns just preclude multifamily housing outright.
Right.
So this bill is entitled, we can get into some of the details if you wish, but it's entitled An Act to Expedite Multifamily Housing Construction.
I've read through it. It's a short one, thank God. The only thing that I would say about it, there's some language in it that I find too open. I think the word developable land, so it's supposed to create a minimum mandatory 1.5% of developable land as a multifamily
use. As opposed to the land area of the city?
Correct. So my issue with that is that opens the door for lots of communities to say, well, we don't have any developable land. How can we possibly put 1.5%?
We've covered the entire city, town
it's,
with nothing
it's
but...
It's a historic bird sanctuary.
Right, yeah.
You know,
so, So anyway, but it's an important idea. At least let's get the process started and talking about it.
The last part about this bill, which I really like, because I stole directly from it, was the requirement, or the, not the requirement, but the allowable mandatory accessory dwelling units in single family homes.
Which became Part A of the Barrett petition?
Part A of the Barrett petition, which was passed in January to be in effect May 1st, unless CDD completely rewrites it.
He stole it from here.
It was stolen from this.
Yeah.
We are two steps ahead of the state. If the state had done this, it would have the same effect that the Barrett petition had.
And by the way, so nobody, let's be clear about this, nobody is in any way proposing that Belmont or Arlington or, well, actually, these are not the worst of the towns, by the way, but you know, many of the cities and towns that they're somehow supposed to have the entire city become multifamily homes. Right. But the thing is, they do have to be, you know, the zoning will be required if this were to pass, and we'll see what its chances are, that they have to say, you have to designate some areas where they're going to permit it.
Wouldn't it be shocking to find municipalities where no accessory dwelling units are allowed, that there are, in fact, many?
Yeah.
Which is my guess and my experience, having been working in real estate for 25 years, that everyone's going to
You're not that old. What did you do? You must have been five when you started.
I am 40, sir. I'll be 41 in June.
There we go. I also want to see some of that multifamily housing get developed in these towns. You know, and I know we mentioned this last week as well, is that, you know, we do a piss poor job of public transportation. Mm-hmm. So the thing is that if you're just going to allow more density out in the burbs, but you don't actually allow some sort of bus lines, train lines, or whatever to service them. So hopefully they'll locate these as close to some kind of transit or potential transit.
Well, we've got the transit nodes already, and they go up as far through, you know, in the Beverly area and other towns towards the west. But we need investment in our infrastructure in that as well. And there's a whole host of things we need.
Right.
And, you know, we always tend to look in one direction to get it. We say, yeah, you know, those developers, they're making so much money, we get a new train, we can get a new this, new that, and the other thing, and you wind up getting either a quarter of what you want or nothing, and people cry foul, which is like why we keep going through this sort of continuous battle in Cambridge over, you know, the nasty evil developers and all the things they don't give us. Because there's other interests. I mean, we're doing Mass in Maine. You know, there were a lot of people from the housing area that came and showed up that were pushing for the housing. Now, that's what they do, and I don't blame them for doing it because that's their field. But no one was saying, you know, I would like a barbecue place or a movie theater or
right.
I'd like cheaper retail for startups. No one's there to say that because it's not like it's a very personal issue.
I said that.
Yeah, well, yeah. You.
Yeah.
I think they're sick of seeing us. Like, you know, right. They're like, oh, God, no.
Yeah.
Well, what are you going to say? C2? Yeah, we know that.
I mean, I think people do need to sort of start thinking a bit more broadly and take off their activist advocate hat occasionally and say, what's the bigger picture? Let's talk about everything.
Cause yeah.
If housing activists only want to talk about housing, you know, but they don't want to talk about, you know, the importance of having a place like Brooklyn Lunch.
Right.
You know, I think then you're pigeonholing yourself.
Well, we touched on that a little bit, I think, in the beginning too, where, you know, it's not so much important that you house people as how you house them, and, you know, things like schools are very important. Things like retail proximate to your location is very important, and we tend to only really think about housing, because that seems like the only thing we know how to control. Plenty of other options out there to regulate and to actually incentivize. And hey, guess what? How about you don't overregulate me? How about you just give me the tools that I need to realize the vision for the area, and then you take your taxes from me. You can beat me up on the retail ground floor. I'd love to have you do it. I already subsidize three local retailers right now, and I've been doing it for 8 years, but you don't hear me asking for anything. Actually, that's not true. I ask for C2 all the time. Sorry. But the point is that, you know, there's a way to skin the cat, really, in that we're not really looking at those options. And the few options we've had put before us, we have put to the wayside, like C2, which now, when C2 comes back, and it's going to come back, do you think it's going to be smaller or larger than what was proposed originally? You know, I think you'll have a lot of people clamoring for taller buildings, more density, and, you know, we'll be at it all over again.
Oh, then we'll just have another impasse, too.
Yeah, so instead of doing these Hail Mary passes, why don't we say, these are a few things that we agree on. let's adopt those and include them into the zoning for the area.
Yeah, one of the things that I enjoyed about the C2 process, and again, one of the reasons why I regret that they haven't really moved on it so much.
They've done nothing.
Is that there really was a discussion about how much density of, you know, residences you want within what distance of a core of an urban area, right, of an urban center like this, in order to support the retail, the existing retail,
right?
Because I think that's pretty important. I mean, the thing is sad truth is we're in for some long-term leases. A lot of the places in Central Square might already be gone because they just don't get enough business.
And that's why I keep stressing, and that's really why I give the thumbs down to Envision. Like, I don't have time, neither do the retailers, and neither do residents really, to wait 3 more years for your coloring book Envision plan, and then another 3 more years to wait for citywide zoning, that everyone's going to agree on, and that the councilors at the time will say, oh yes, you know, I've heard CDD say that C2's part of this plan. You know, if it was so contentious 3 years ago, it's going to be more so now, and you're not going to get anybody to agree. What does someone in North Cambridge care about whether or not the buildings in Central Square are 14, 16, and 18 feet tall, or stories tall? They don't. In fact, what they're more likely to say is that...
Well, somebody on a listserv told them they're supposed to think that.
Well, that's my point. They'll get together and they'll say, well, we'll block this if you block this.
Right.
And that's how they band together.
Right.
So without having some counselors, they're going to say, listen, this is the right thing to do, and we're going to go do it. It's going to be a tough climb.
Yeah, I always think that the conversation is just all wrong, you know, because it's either pro this or anti that. So, like, let's just have a nice conversation about what kind of whole system holistically works well.
That also comes back to my previous point about CDD only dealing with, you know, larger developments. Like all the inclusionary zoning, all the changes in the C2 proposed, envisioned new development. It had nothing to do with existing properties. It's like in this report that came out for the inclusionary, it has nothing to say about what an existing owner who owns, you know, 80 residential units in Cambridge, what he might want to do to, you know, further develop his property and create an open door to inclusionary in his property. Because right now, with an existing parcel, that door is closed. You know, if I did residential at Main Street down the street here, I would open the door to inclusionary. Now, without any increase in height or density or anything like that, why on God's green earth would I throw 4 units into the inclusionary bonus program that I basically lose from my current stock? Why would I do that? For no benefit whatsoever.
Right.
Did I go on a tirade a little bit? Sorry.
That's okay. I like you anyway. So anyway, Envision Cambridge is a coming. They're evaluating. I don't know quite what this means, honestly. And I'm not trying to be cynical here. But the consultant, UTIL, they say that they've taken in a lot of the data from public input from their various dog and pony show, and they're going to come up with some sort of, I don't know quite what you do, because if basically what you're getting is sort of anecdotal remarks saying, like, you know, like I would say Central Square needs more love. I don't know how you codify that or measure that.
Hug a telephone pole.
Right. So I don't really know what's going to come out of that. At some point we actually start getting down to brass tacks and talking turkey and every other metaphor I can come up with.
I mean, I went to the one opening for UTIL when they came to City Council a while ago, and, you know, they seemed very open to the idea of what they called live TV planning, which, you know, in my mind was suggesting that, you know, zoning changes interim while we are doing things, i.e. like the Barrett petition, i.e. like inclusionary, i.e. like the 5 other zoning petitions that have come in the past like 3 months, are worth looking at to incorporate into the greater whole, because the real master zoning changes aren't coming for quite some time.
The way I hope this all shakes out is that this Envision Cambridge process is something that runs parallel to all the other processes that are always going to be happening anyway, including, I hope, some hard proposals for doing something for the betterment of Central Square.
I promise you, I'm not going to wait another 5 years for zoning changes in Central Square. I'm a busybody, but I'm imploring groups like ABC, individual...
Better Cambridge.
You know, any group that's willing to take on the mantle a little bit, if they really want to advocate for housing, to bring a petition of their own. The language for C2 is on the doorstep of CDD. All you have to do is read it, understand it, amend it, and adopt it. And that sounds like a lot of work, but, you know, if it's worth fighting for, then What are you really doing? Instead of having this sort of constant global conversation about, oh, what's to be done?
Right.
You know, I think having people, crazy people like me always yelling about it is probably not a good thing.
Well, I think there are still some people who just say, well, just let Central Square be, it's just fine as it is. But I think they don't really, they should talk to some of the people in the business community about some of the businesses that are just hanging on by a thread.
I have conspiracy theories all about that. But, I've heard counselors talk to me about how they thought Central Square was our Manhattan. And I was like, have you ever been to Manhattan? You gotta be kidding me. It looks more like the Linway. That's Central Square is our Linway right now. It's not our Manhattan.
That's one of the things. The geometry of Central Square is so much more challenging.
No offense to the Linway. Just saying.
Right. Hey, Lin, City of Sin. Never came out the way you went in. That's right. So is that a universally
well-known
expression? Yeah. So, anyway, let's just hope that something good with Central Square can happen concurrent to the envisioned Cambridge.
Aside from my boutique hotel that I'm building.
That's right, and I think that's going to be wonderful. And it's still, it may be a hotel, but it's still housing.
Oh, it's still residential technically, but I will be probably coming to the BZA too and asking for a rooftop bar. So if you like rooftop bars, come and join me. If you hate them, come and join me.
Come and join me, yeah. So let's see. So I'm trying to think now. Do we have anything else here? Have we sort of solved all the problems of the universe?
Oh, my God. I think we're causing more problems than we're solving. But, my conspiracy theory on Central Square is that, I think people are so afraid to screw it up that they don't do anything.
You know, when I spoke in front of the planning board about the Mass and Main thing, my point was not so much that I thought it was right, wrong, or anything. I just said, perhaps naively, I said, we need to try and do something. A little kick in the pants, a little, let's give it, let's upset the apple cart a little bit and see what happens.
I was a staunch advocate for Mass and Main, but, I did so mostly as my vengeance of C2.
Right. Yeah, and no movement on that yet, which is a little weird to be sure. But let's hopefully something will come.
You said by 2017 we should see something.
Well, we need it sooner. So
I agree.
Anyway, so this has been another edition of Cambridge Inside Out, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.